It could be you. Every day promptly at 5 o'clock, our two dogs rouse themselves from their relentless relaxation and trot up to Nick's office to agitate for a walk. At the very least, the dogs have a good sense of time, but I wonder if they also have a sense of a hopeful future. Do they hope that they're going to have a nice long walk, that there might be a squirrel to chase, or another dog to sniff? Or is their sense of future measured in mere minutes, perhaps driven by a swelling bladder? Certainly, a sense of the future is one of the defining characteristics of humans. Perhaps our cave-dwelling ancestors had a more limited outlook, wondering if the winter was going to be cold or hoping they had enough wood to keep the fire going. But as cognitive abilities and communication improved, helpful tips were passed on to future generations. Now, a good chunk of our day is spent thinking about the future. For ourselves, our parents, our children, our grandchildren, and even our planet. And with this focus on the future comes another uniquely well-developed human characteristic, hope. At some level, contemplating the future involves assessing probabilities, determining which ones can be manipulated, and then devising the best strategy to improve the odds. This is what gets us out of bed in the morning, continuously working to assure a full and productive life and a safe environment for ourselves and future generations. Then there are the risks that cannot be manipulated, like our health or odd twists of fate. And this also gets us out of bed in the morning, the idea that an unfettered future cannot be guaranteed and we must all seize the moment. And finally, hope is what fills the cracks between what we do today to improve our tomorrow and that stretch of time until the future morphs into the present. But even the most clear-eyed master of the universe who has a firm and manipulative grasp of all the probabilities has to sit back and wait. At some point, we all have to do what we can and then just hope for the best. All of these thoughts were prompted by the recent Mega Millions lottery, which was offering a prize of some $600 million, instantly propelling the lucky winner onto the Forbes Richest American issue. All you needed to do was buy a ticket and then hope for the best. State-run lotteries have been around since the Roman Empire and have often provided funding for civic projects. For example, Augustus, who lived from 31 BC to 41 AC, relied on lotteries to rebuild Rome. Most recently, lotteries have been used to fund the 2012 London Olympic Games. Supporters have positioned a lottery as a voluntary tax, but critics say that the probability of winning is essentially nil, and that lotteries are basically a tax on stupidity, primarily attracting the poor and uneducated who are the least able to afford such an indulgence. And then there is the curious argument that the sudden unearned wealth of lotteries would undermine the work ethic. England banned its state lottery in 1823, and the United States followed suit in 1892. Eventually, these governments could not afford to ignore the windfall funding of a voluntary tax. Lotteries reemerged in the United States in the 1960s, but it was not until 1992 that England reinstated its national lottery. The argument over lotteries has focused on whether or not the government should be promoting gambling with such impossible odds, basically selling bogus and irrational hope. Humans are considered rational beings, but the flip side is that we are also perfectly capable of being totally irrational. There's a very funny scene in the movie Dumb and Dumber where the totally inept doofus, played by Jim Carrey, pursues the unattainable Lauren Holly character. She turns him down for a date, and then he inquires as to his future probabilities. "What are my chances?" "Not good," says the Lauren Holly character. "You mean like 1 in 100? "No, I'd say more like 1 in a million, she says, trying to brush him off for good. Jim Carrey then exults, "So you're telling me there's a chance? Yay!" We all laugh at the stupidity of Jim Carrey, who believes the odds of 1 in a million give him a realistic hope. And yet we all go out and buy lottery tickets when the chances are at least 100 times worse. And at least Jim Carrey has the opportunity to improve his odds, although they're truly remote, by getting a better haircut and fixing his chipped tooth. In contrast, lottery players can do nothing to improve their odds. Even buying more than one ticket won't significantly improve your odds, and statisticians also helpfully point out that it is more likely that you will die in a car crash on the way to buying your lottery ticket, or that it is more likely that you'll be hit by lightning. However, even the most uneducated must have a clear grasp that they are not going to win, but cheerfully buy tickets anyway. We bought 4. The hope of winning is irrational, but that isn't the point, because lotteries operate at the very remote end of the spectrum where hope turns into pure fantasy. And fantasy is still an important human attribute, a necessary escape from the rigors and anxiety of hope. We indulge in fantasies every day by reading a book or going to a movie. But for the low, low price of $1, the lottery lets me fantasize for an entire week and lets my imagination run wild, planting what I would do with untold riches. The essayist Charles Lamb, whose name I am familiar with since his pen name, Eliah, often appears in crossword puzzles, was an enthusiastic supporter of the lottery and envisioned it as a spiritual force that freed the imagination and delivered many from a humdrum existence. In the 1920s, he wrote, "Let the lottery be termed a delusion, which instead of beguiling its followers into swamps, caverns, and pitfalls, allures them on with the blandishments of enchantment to a Garden of Eden, an ever-blooming Elysian of delight." I do take exception with Lamb's word delusion, a word that to me describes a harmless fantasy that is mistaken for reality. For example, someone who truly believes that they are in possession of the winning lottery ticket. A delusion can become dangerous. After all, delusional thinking is a psychiatric diagnosis and is also a legitimate defense in a murder trial. At the very least, it can turn you into the worst version of yourself, which happened to me one Christmas. Every year, our family has a Christmas grab bag which consists of cheap or amusing gifts contributed by family and friends. The presents are wrapped and put into a pile. In the first round of the game, everyone rolls dice, and if you get a 7, 11, or doubles, you select one of the gifts and open it up. When everything is open, each person showcases their gifts to the group in preparation for the more frantic second round. Once again, the dice are thrown, and if you get a 7, 11, or doubles, you get to select someone else's item or offload one of your pure losers onto someone else's pile. There's a time limit of 5 minutes, and typically one of the gifts emerges as the must-have item that is madly exchanged as the time winds down. One memorable year, the must-have gift was 2 lottery tickets. Quietly and collectively, the entire family group had the same delusional thought that they were, in fact, the winning tickets. The race was on. The dice were passed around the room faster and faster, and anyone with a winning roll snatched the lottery tickets. One of the participants was a sister-in-law whose sense of entitlement would have become absolutely unbearable if she won. Even though I knew it was totally irrational, I was going to do everything in my power to prevent her from getting those tickets. After all, as the lottery might whisper, it could be her. Our children, Ned and Francis, aged 10 and 6, were also playing and would have preferred to use their winning rolls to grab the fancy chocolate bars or other treats among the gifts, but I screamed at them, "Get the lottery tickets!" only to have them snatched away by my sister-in-law. The lottery tickets must have changed hands 20 times in the last 2 minutes, and we were limp with exhaustion when the final buzzer went off. But there was Ned, triumphantly holding the tickets with a winning grin on his face. He turned to me and said, "We won, Mom! We won! What are we going to do with all this money? Can I at least spend part of it?" Poor kid. He thought we were actually vying for real winning tickets and didn't realize that I had gone from a fun family fantasy to a vindictive delusion in 5 quick minutes. Nick bought 4 lottery tickets for the recent Mega Millions lottery, and at dinner that night, he told his mother she could pick 2 of the tickets to keep as her own. She looked at the tickets very carefully, and in that moment, I knew we were thinking the same thing. I thought about how foolish I would feel if I had the winning lottery ticket and then just gave it away. And I knew that she was thinking, "Boy, it'd be so stupid if I had the winning lottery ticket in my hand and I didn't pick it." After several moments of contemplation, she turned to Nick and said sweetly, "Honey, why don't I just keep all these tickets? Couldn't you just get a couple more for yourself on your way home?" So maybe it boils down to this. When the dogs go for a walk in the winter, they like to hunt for slow-moving field mice and are occasionally successful. So perhaps this is hope. In summer, they like to chase squirrels who merely scamper up a tree, but sometimes the dogs come close. So maybe this is fantasy. But when our pampered dogs howl with the coyotes at night, they are just as delusional as I am.